We can't turn back the hands of time. But what we can do is to slow the rate of growth of these programs.
The United States says it's not North Korea's enemy. It's Wednesday, August 2nd. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're on Facebook right now at VOA Asia. Also ahead, the Afghanistan fight described as a stalemate, a Vietnam War hero honored. Chinese military celebrates 90 years, walking against Alzheimer's. A new satellite tracks pollution. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, in a rare appearance at a press briefing Tuesday, addressed North Korean leaders, saying, quote, "We are not your enemy," as he called for dialogue amid rapidly rising tensions. Tillerson said the North Korean threat has materialized in the ways we expected it would, and he said the administration has responded appropriately.
We initiated a sustained and continued intensified campaign on what I like to call peaceful pressure, because the options available to us, I think, as all of you well understand, are limited, and particularly if we think we are operating under a short period of time.
Tillerson said the understanding is there is no future in which North Korea possesses nuclear weapons. Tillerson said he doesn't blame the Chinese for the situation in North Korea, but that the United States would seek Chinese help in achieving a dialogue with North Korea.
The Chinese have been very clear with us that we share the same objective, a denuclearized Korean peninsula. They do not see it in their interest for North Korea to have nuclear weapons, just as we do not see it in anyone's interest. China has ways that they can put pressure on and influence the North Korean regime because of this significant economic relationship that no one else has.
On Monday, President Donald Trump uttered assurances during the start of his cabinet meeting that the threat from North Korea will be taken care of. After Friday's ICBM test launch, the second by North Korea, the United States responded with a sudden joint ballistic missile firing exercise with South Korean forces and flying a pair of U.S. Air Force B-1B bombers over the peninsula in a show of force. The U.S. Air Force Global Strike Command says later today the United States will launch an unarmed Minuteman III ICBM from Vandenberg Air Force Base in California to, quote, "validate and verify the effectiveness, readiness, and accuracy of the weapons system." Tensions could escalate in August when the United States and South Korea hold an annual large-scale joint military drill, which always prompts fresh threats from North Korea. VOA's Sarah Williams spoke with Harry Kazanis, Director of Defense Studies at the Center for National Interest, a Washington-based think tank, about ways the United States might proceed forward on North Korea.
Well, I think the first thing we have to do is we have to table the talk of trying to, quote unquote, solve the North Korean issue. There's no easy solutions here. There's no exact military option that would, you know, we could decapitate Kim Jong-un or invade the country. Those things are off the table. All the, quote unquote, solutions are hard things to impose, regime change or you know, going to China and saying to them, China, you solve it, and having them do regime change. So I think the first thing is we have to take that big step back. I think ultimately where this goes, and the Trump administration has basically signaled this, is some sort of unilateral sanctions essentially on the different firms around the world and financial entities that are essentially helping the North Koreans build out their nuclear missile programs. Now, I want to be very clear. That is not going to stop what they've already done. We can't turn back the hands of time. But what we can do is to slow the rate of growth of these programs. So keep in mind this. The North Korean economy is one-third the size of Ethiopia. It is very small. So that means the resources they can put into their nuclear program is small. So if you constrain that and you raise the cost dramatically of what the North Koreans are trying to do, you will have an impact. So how you do that very quickly is basically going to essentially putting sanctions on any firm that is helping them do this or the people that are helping them launder money to do this. And unfortunately, that puts us at loggerheads with China, because China is one of the biggest essentially indirect funders of the North Korean nuclear missile programs. Also, a lot of Chinese state-owned enterprises do what essentially is illegal illegal work with the North Koreans, selling them goods that are basically under sanction, going around sanctions. We even have reports where basically they've given them the trucks that these mobile missiles would go on. So I think if you start doing some of those things, you will bring the Chinese to the table. And I think we might actually have some good strategies to at least mitigate the problem.
Yeah, because there are a lot of concerns among North Korea's neighbors, and the allies of the United States, Japan and South Korea, are very concerned about this. And when the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un says, well, you know, our missiles are now within range of the United States, that's certainly rather a scary proposition.
It is a very scary proposition, but I feel like we should have seen this coming. And I think it's a symptom of the fact that every administration really, since time in perpetuity, has always taken North Korea and made it the fourth, fifth, or sixth biggest problem. And it's basically not a problem at all because there's not a lot you're willing to do that. But I've been reading reports about North Korean ICBMs for two decades now. We knew this was coming. Also, keep in mind this fact. The United States tested its first intercontinental ballistic missile in 1957. This technology is six decades old. People know how to do these things. There are many countries around the world that have this capability or could easily field this capability. When we talk about nuclear weapons, the first atomic explosion by the United States was in 1945. These weapons, while we might think of them as advanced because they can kill millions of people and now they could come to our shores, this is not anything new. But we have very little time now to react to this. This isn't a situation where we can just say, oh, the North Koreans are still advancing their program. We have a little bit more time. The time to act is now.
Harry Kazianis, Director of the Defense Studies at the Center for National Interest. We invite you to read more on this developing story on Facebook at VOA Asia, and also visit the voanews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. Top U.S. Senate Democrat urges Trump to block China deals over North Korea. Indonesia lifts threat to ban encrypted app Telegram. Truth elusive in case of assassinated lawyer in Myanmar. China's president says country will never swallow bitter fruit of surrendering territory. U.S. to exempt journalists and aid workers from North Korea travel ban. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also stop by our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. A new quarterly report by the U.S. Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction has detailed a steady level of casualties among Afghan security forces and quotes U.S. military commanders as describing the fight with insurgents at a stalemate. The report said more than 2,500 soldiers were killed in the period from January 1st through May 8th, with another 4,200 wounded. The report also said the government controlled less than 60% of the country's 407 districts, the same as the previous quarter. Sigar said insurgents control about 11%, with the other 29% contested. Last month, the UN assistance mission in Afghanistan said in the first 6 months reported a record number of civilian deaths at more than 1,600, with more than 3,500 wounded. The Sigar report release comes as renewed questions are raised about the government's ability to secure the capital, Kabul, following an attack Monday on the Iraqi embassy claimed by Islamic State. Two Afghan employees, along with four militants, were killed in the hours-long battle. Indiana University professor Nazeef Shahrani, a native of Afghanistan who just returned from the country, tells VOA's Victor Beatty residents of Kabul have a complete lack of confidence in the central government's ability to project security.
And people are up in arms, essentially, calling, you know, if a government cannot protect them, they should not be governing. They should get out. There is a very serious trust gap between the ordinary people, especially in Kabul, and the government as such.
The Islamic State first appeared in Afghanistan about 2 years ago. Is the group in competition with Taliban or working in concert with it?
Well, it seemed to be, at least publicly, that they are feuding with one another. But the reality is that they are the same people renamed. Some of them are Taliban and some of them are calling themselves ISIS. It may have something to do with the fact that after the death of Taliban leaders, there have been disputes within the group for leadership and factionalism within the group. So it may be part of the factional divisions within Taliban. And of course, also calling oneself ISIS these days carries a more potent sort of title, and they seem to be purchased for that. So some of this may have to do with that. But I think essentially it is probably the same group of extremists and violent people who are essentially making it a profession to themselves these days.
Senator John McCain, who chairs the Senate's Armed Services Committee, indicated on Monday that he is prepared to offer his own blueprint for a victory in Afghanistan sometime in September. Of course, the Trump administration has yet to come out with its Afghan strategy. What do you see going forward?
Well, I hope Senator McCain does provide some kind of vision, and I hope it's not the same old vision of sending more troops. I think fundamentally what Afghanistan needs is a better governance system, and I hope that it would include some kind of constitutional amendment in Afghanistan that allows community self-governance in the country. And without that, I don't think much is going to change. They always approach Afghanistan's problem as a security problem. It is a political problem. They need to address the political mess in the country of exclusive governance and exclusive economics that has prevailed the country. People don't feel they're part of the governance system. A few people, a clique, basically a small clique, is running the country and filling their pockets and ignoring the people, including the security issues.
Nazif Shahrani said Afghanistan's strong presidency encourages appointment of relatives and cronies, and he said allowing villages, districts, and provinces to run their own affairs will lead to local police forces and a better chance of defeating insurgents. Happening now in Asia, Shahid Khan Abbasi became Pakistan's new prime minister Tuesday to replace Nawaz Sharif, who was disqualified by the country's highest court last week on corruption charges. Pakistan was plunged into political uncertainty Friday when a Supreme Court panel disqualified Sharif to hold office. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Vietnam War veteran Jim McLuhan was awarded the Medal of Honor Monday for his heroic actions during a battle of Nui Yon Hill in 1969. McLuhan is the first to be awarded the Medal of Honor by President Donald Trump. And as VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb reports, the war hero is credited with saving 10 soldiers during the three-day battle.
America's highest military honor was earned by Medal of Honor recipient Jim McLuhan about five decades ago, in what U.S. Army medic Jim calls the worst 3 days of his life. It was May 1969, in the middle of the Vietnam War. McLuhan was wounded multiple times, but refused to leave his battle brothers to get medical treatment.
And I looked down and I had blood all over me, and I said, well, I'm not going. You're gonna need me.
McLuhan was one of just 89 men battling against 2,000 Vietnamese enemy fighters.
I don't know how they didn't finish us off, tell you the truth. There was so many of them, they were everywhere.
Joe Mindorf frequently had to cover McLuhan, known simply as Doc to his battlemates, as the medic dashed into the line of fire time and again to carry his wounded comrades back to safety.
Seeing Doc run out there like that was just unbelievable. You know, not many people do that.
Bill Arnold was one of 10 men saved by McLuhan. Thrown from his helicopter, going into shock and unable to move, Arnold looked up and saw the unexpected.
What the hell would anybody be running into the line of fire? You know, it was Doc. He coming after me.
In those final hours, a helicopter sent to save the men was unable to land. They had no food or water and were short on bullets.
When that helicopter pulled out, all hope vanished with it. And it got almost like silent, you know, eerie. And then the word came down. It was whispered, save one for yourself.
McLuhan, who was drafted just 3 months after getting a coaching position, thought of his family a world away and prayed.
Lord,
if you get me out of this hell on earth so that I can tell my dad face to face again that I love him and give him a hug, I'll be the best dad, the best coach, and the best teacher than I could ever be.
McLuhan and many of his battlemates did make it out alive that day, and he went on to teach and coach for many years to come. Now, in addition to the titles father, teacher, and coach, McLuhan can add the title American Hero. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
From Pink to Pitbull, Beyonce to Bruno Mars, the hits live here on the Top 20 Countdown. Hi, I'm Ray McDonald, and for the past 30 years, I've been counting down the very best of the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart. The hit list never sleeps, so don't you miss a moment of the action. Join me every Thursday for the Top 20 Countdown, right here and worldwide on the Voice of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia, ex-Thai Prime Minister Yin Luck Shinawat maintained her innocence in her closing statement Tuesday before a Bangkok court in her criminal trial on alleged negligence. Yin Luck is accused of mishandling a multi-billion dollar rice buying scheme initiated during her tenure as Prime Minister. Make VOA Asia Facebook your place to visit every day. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, following a massive military parade during the weekend, China marked its Army Day and the 90th anniversary of the People's Liberation Army's founding on Tuesday, with top leader Xi Jinping reiterating the importance of the military's unswerving loyalty to the Communist Party rule. Chinese political analyst Willie Lam and others say the emphasis on loyalty, along with the PLA's earlier drills to showcase its fighting prowess, has served the dual purpose of growing nationalism to consolidate Xi's grip on power and as an intimidation to China's perceived and potential enemies abroad. Xi is also especially eager in demonstrating that he has the full control over the military before the 19th Party Congress this fall.
About a month ago, Xi Jinping conferred upon himself the additional, perhaps ultimate title of Supreme Commander, the term which had been used only once by Mao Zedong. So definitely, the show of force Xi Jinping hopes would confirm his status as Mao Zedong of the 21st century.
At a military rally Tuesday in Beijing's Great Hall of the People, Xi heralded the PLA's success in modernization and its confidence in conquering any foreign invasion while reiterating the importance of their loyalty to the Communist Party. Xi stressed China will never allow any people, organization, or political party to split any part of Chinese territory out of the country at any time in any form. Willie Lam said such a tough line on national sovereignty was meant to trigger nationalistic sentiment among the Chinese, which is used as a key pillar of legitimacy to support the Communist Party's rule in China and to fend off any of what it calls hostile anti-China Western forces. The weekend's military parade was also significant in that China showed off some of its newest weaponry, which has never before been made public.
This serves as intimidation to China's real and potential enemies that Beijing is committed to spending more resources, more money on developing weapons and on closing the gap with the U.S.
Despite China's efforts to catch up in its military development, Lam says experts believe it still lags 15 to 20 years behind U.S. combat capabilities. Our thanks to Joyce Huang and Brian Kupchinski for sending us this report. Developing at this hour in Asia, American and Japanese ships and aircraft are searching for a missing American sailor in the South China Sea. The sailor was reported missing from the USS Stethem destroyer early Tuesday. The ship was conducting routine operations in the South China Sea at the time, according to a Navy statement. Top stories and great features are on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, we know that staying active and involved with family and friends can keep our brains healthy as we get older. Faith Lapidus walks us through a new study in Portland, Oregon that combines those activities to gauge their effectiveness in warding off dementia.
Seniors are taking to the road to slow down the memory loss that's part of Alzheimer's. The 21 participants in a study run by researchers at Oregon Health and Sciences University are walking to places that remind them of their youth.
I think Bob's house was his before he moved. Walking is good for brain health. We know that being socially engaged is good for brain health. And there's also memory work involved in this because they're looking at historical photos of the neighborhood, and they're all culturally celebratory.
The study is called SHARP, which stands for Sharing History Through Active Reminiscence and Photo Imagery. A senior experiencing memory problems takes a walk 3 times a week with 2 other seniors who are cognitively healthy.
What we find when we walk, all of us, is that there are a lot of things that we haven't had to remember and that we can't remember. And then as we walk and talk, the memories pop up, and it's reassuring that they're still there, number one, and that we can access them.
The groups use a map with directions that's loaded onto a tablet computer and follow the route through Portland's historically black neighborhood. At each stop, the group looks at old pictures and shares memories.
Tell us about a time you dressed up for a big event in your youth.
All the study participants are African American, a group that is twice as likely to develop Alzheimer's or other types of dementia as white Americans. It's also a group that's not well represented in clinical studies.
95% of the population that participates in clinical trials is actually white Americans. And we need to change that because we need to understand actually what might be different in underrepresented populations that increase their risk.
In the meantime, the SHARP participants are walking, talking, and they hope, reducing their risk of dementia. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News, Washington.
Every second, millions of tons of various gases rise from the surface of the Earth into the atmosphere. Many of them are man-made and harmful, contributing massively to pollution and consequently to global warming. The European Space Agency, ESA, is slowly building a network of satellites that VOA's George Pudich reports will help scientists create a real-time global map of the health of our planet.
The launch of the all-weather radar satellite Sentinel-1A in April 2014 marked the start of the Copernicus mission, the largest Earth observation program funded by the European Commission and the European Space Agency, ESA. Since then, 3 other satellites have been launched, each providing a unique set of environmental and security data on a global level. Sentinel-5P, scheduled to launch in September, will carry a highly sophisticated spectrometer called TROPOMI. It can monitor pollution-causing gases such as methane, formaldehyde, nitrogen dioxide, sulfur dioxide, as well as measure the recovery of the ozone layer, all related to climate change.
We've built many satellites that observe the Earth in various ways, but this one is going to make an operational contribution to be honest, our daily lives. This is dealing with pollutants. It's dealing with the impacts of things which are happening on Earth and feeding back to us on Earth and our policies.
The satellite will be flying almost exactly over the poles, 824 kilometers above the Earth. Every second, it will scan a 7-kilometer long and 2,600 kilometer wide strip of the planet's surface in 7 by 7 kilometer resolution, sending results to ground stations in Norway and Canada. Within 3 hours, scientists will be able to create detailed maps of air quality everywhere on the Earth.
It's about understanding the sources of these trace gases, these pollutants, where they're coming from, how they're linked to man-made and natural activities.
Compared to an earlier environmental satellite, Sciamaki, which stopped working in 2012, the amount of data from Sentinel-5P will be enormous.
With this instrument, we will generate in 1 month what Sciamaki generated in 10 years.
In 2021, ESA plans to launch another satellite, which together with Sentinel-5P will comprise the 5th group of Earth observation satellites within the Copernicus mission. George Pudich, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Our program is found in many different places, iTunes and SoundCloud, on Facebook at VOA Asia Facebook, and also on our website at voanews.com. Also, if you happen to be in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, you can catch us on Helps Radio at Help University. We thank everyone there who's been listening. Our thanks to director Tracy Carter, engineer Daryl Smith, managing editor Diane Gao, Ali Ogden, and David Bird on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a great day.